All right, ready?
Yes.
Ready for the 15th time today.
Oh, shut your yapper.
Pie hole.
Okay.
Shut your damn pie hole.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Real DMC Podcast. DMC stands for Dave, Marks, and Colin. What's going on, guys?
Hey.
I wasn't ready for the what's going on.
Yeah, as I say, Marcus starts the podcast and immediately takes a big drink.
Going well.
Today we're here to discuss one of the most successful found footage films of all time. From the year 2008, directed by Matt Reeves, let's talk about Cloverfield.
What was that noise?
It sounded like an animal.
Calls are pouring into the New York One newsroom as a thunderous roaring sound.
Do you even see something from the roof?
What animal sounds like that? It's shaking everywhere, man. It's like tremors.
Looks like you should have left town a little bit earlier.
All right, Marcus, this was your pick, so why did we watch Cloverfield?
Matt Reeves is the director of the new Batman movie, and we have not done any of his movies, so I decided to go back and pick, it's not quite his first movie, but it's basically his first movie, and decided to pick this one up.
Is it? I think. Is it basically his first movie?
Well, he did The Pallbearer, which I don't think anyone else has seen besides Colin.
He's also done Let Me In, a couple of the Planet of the Apes movies.
Am I thinking? Well, those were before, not before this.
Yeah, Marcus was saying that it was more his, almost his first film. So I think that's technically correct, because I believe he made The Pallbearer and this as his two feature films.
Yeah.
First feature films.
What are you talking about?
He's made other movies, but I'm just saying this was his first. How's that?
I thought you said that Batman was his first.
No.
No, that's like Marcus and I are like, what are you talking about? Okay.
You got me like totally. I'm like, am I wrong here? Did I get the wrong director?
I'm sorry. I like completely misunderstood what you were saying. Can we circle? Can we just go back, erase the last like 30 seconds? Marcus, why did you choose this movie?
Yeah, I chose Cloverfield because Matt Reeves has made the new Batman, and I wanted to go back and look at some of his earlier work. And he did do The Pallbearer, a romantic comedy with Gwyneth Paltrow and David Schwimmer, but nobody's seen that except Colin. And so Cloverfield is his first real, probably his defining genre of movies, something along his action and adventure kind of movies versus the romantic comedy, which he's not done since.
That is true.
And I saw Cloverfield, I think, once. I really enjoyed it, and I hadn't seen it in quite a while. So it's also another good one to revisit.
So by way of general introduction, so the film maintains a 7.0 rating on the IMDb. I'm actually surprised by that. I would have expected it maybe it would be a touch higher. The film was definitely a big success. So it was made on a budget of $25 million, and it grossed close to $80 million in the U.S. box office and $172 million worldwide. It's actually one of the most successful found footage films financially. I think if you look at the other, you know, kind of competitors in that space, you have the Blair Witch Project, which I think did about $250 million worldwide, and then the Paranormal Activity films have actually been very successful. So some of those have made in, you know, north of 200 or 220, 230 million. I have not seen any of the Paranormal
Activity films. I haven't seen. I mean, I think they just kept going with the same concept. Oh, I like it. I like the baby monitor concept. It's kind of spooky.
I thought it was completely overrated because everyone is talking about how like scary and amazing it was. And I watched it. And I was like, this?
Yeah. Blair Witch is probably, I mean, both those two though are also the budgets much, much cheaper. This one, he had a full budget on this movie. I mean, it was produced by J.J. Abrams. So it's definitely a full feature release.
You know, this is not actually our first found footage movie that we did for the podcast.
Nope, we did. We did do Wreck, which Marcus actually watched the dubbed English version of Wreck, I think, right? Wasn't it? And Marcus said that the found footage dubbed combo was a little bit of a tough set,
that is,
I believe.
Not a good combo at all.
So. Yeah. Critically, this film was I think, fairly well received for the most part. I didn't go back and look at the Metacritic or Rotten Tomato, but I did jump into just a handful of reviews. And for the most part, it was positive. Marcus noted here that a lot of them were saying it's effectively the Blair Witch crossed with Godzilla, yeah. Which is, that's a pretty good summary.
Critics was 78% on Rotten Tomatoes and audience 68%. So I actually was surprised. Like you said, it's 7.0 on IMDb. And I thought it would have been a bit higher, like 7.5, yeah. 7.6. It definitely has more, maybe it's more of a cult following, or maybe like, I don't know, just a J.J. Abrams connection too. Like this has that feel of a, like all the followers of Lost and that kind of like, kind of early internet sleuthing and stuff going on. It definitely feels like it was a bigger movie than what it seems now.
Yeah, I mean, do you guys want to jump into the viral marketing stuff right now? Because that's one of the most interesting things about this film, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Well, so I remember the initial rollout of this when they launched the trailer for this film. It was, you know, you had the explosions, you had the scream, and then you had the Statue of Liberty head, you know, come bouncing off of the building wall and then, you know, rolling to a stop in the middle of the street. And I think to this day, that was a very effective teaser trailer.
Yeah.
It's a great piece of imagery. It's, you know, it's a relatively iconic piece of imagery for a trailer. It ranks up there, maybe not the same as the White House getting blown up in Independence Day, but it's a really good visual hook that left a lot of curiosity or created a lot of curiosity. And also you didn't understand what was going on in the trailer. So
yeah.
It left you very curious as to what the story was. So those two pieces together, I think were even the initial rollout, I think super effective from a marketing and you know, kind of grabbing your attention standpoint.
Well, and not only that, there was no title attached to that trailer, to that teaser trailer.
Yeah.
And it was just, I think even the poster just said, you know, 1-8-18.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of speculation. Nobody really knew what it was. People were thinking, oh, is it like a new Godzilla movie? Is it a Lost spinoff? I mean, people were like delving into this trailer and trying to figure out. In fact, there was USA Today, because somebody, I guess they'd misinterpreted a line in the trailer of It's Alive as It's a Lion. And that led USA Today to speculate that it was actually going to be a live action adaptation of Voltron.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Which I thought was like really funny. It's like, that's when funny. You like go way, way too deep.
Yeah.
It was
just one of those early internet, like people really, like the internet was, it wasn't small anymore, right? It's gotten bigger. I think this is right around the time MySpace was the tops of the internet. Facebook wasn't quite as big as it was, but people would, a lot of message boards, a lot of discussions, a lot of like internet sleuthing. It was like kind of a great time for it. And this is like during, you know, the heyday of Lost and the heyday of like people looking for deeper meanings and finding hidden messages and stuff like that. And filmmakers like relishing in that. And I think Reeves and Abrams did a great job with it.
Yeah, I mean, they created all these, you know, fake websites. I mean, they even had all the major characters had personal MySpace pages with like photos of them and blog posts. I mean, they really went all out. And so you could do a lot of research to figure out what this movie was before it had ever even dropped.
Yeah, they had a fake website for the oil company that has the platform that gets destroyed. They have a bunch of individual sites that they set up, as you mentioned, for the characters and some of their backstory. And then they had even all this other hidden stuff, right? So they had all these links to little pieces of footage that were here that were, you know, supposedly a leaked government document, like that kind of thing. And I remember being caught up in it, or at least paying attention to it. And you mentioned the It's a Lion thing. And one thing that's really funny is that, so Ain't It Cool News was one of those websites where, you know, early on, this might have been right around its heyday, I'm not sure, but they had this talkback session where people would argue, and there was a huge argument that went on for a long time, and it was, it's a lion or it's alive. And so people were just arguing about whether or not, what do you mean it's a lion? What's a lion doing causing explosions and all this kind of stuff? So it's one of those kind of famous internet moments, just in terms of actually user participation. I think from a film standpoint, this is one of those things that was just off the charts. I mean, I can't think of another movie that was more effective with its viral marketing than this. Can you?
Yeah, Blair Witch was pretty good. I think that was one of the earlier ones too. These are the two that kind of stand out to me though, for sure. It's kind of the found footage too.
Yeah, I normally don't go in for that stuff, but I did find this one pretty interesting because they did a good job of just like setting it up and making you want to know what was this. I mean, it was a whole, the studio wanted like secrecy. They built secrecy around this whole project. There are like multiple different titles going around. I think they had like three or four different titles, like Slusho and Cheese and Gray Shot. Cloverfield was the actual first title of the movie, and then they ended up going back to that because people like knew that, and so they didn't want to tank the familiarity with it.
And do you know where Cloverfield comes from?
Yeah, it's the name of the street outside of the production studio.
The exit that J.J. Abrams takes. On the Santa Monica freeway. Yeah,
it's kind of interesting because they retconned it to be the clovers are the first plant to grow after a nuclear attack. And so it's a...
interesting. Oh, that's pretty good.
The hammer down protocol.
Here's how secret they got. When they were casting the movie, they didn't send out scripts. The actors just read from old Alias and Lost scripts. And they wrote scenes for auditioning that were never even meant to be in the film. Like, that's how serious they were about people not letting it get out. In fact, Lizzie Kaplan, who plays...
Marlena,
right. Like, she took the role. She didn't know, again, she hadn't read the script. Like, she only took the role because she was a fan of Lost.
Yeah. She thought it was a rom-com, right, or something? Like, it was a...
Oh, God, I don't know.
Yeah, I think she thought it was like a romantic movie or something. She didn't know what it was. She didn't know it was a monster / horror movie.
She didn't know that her character was going to end up like exploding.
Yeah.
By the way, I love Lizzie Kaplan.
She was great in this. She's got not a great chemistry between her and TJ Miller, but it's a great chemistry.
That's because there is no, yeah.
intentionally not great chemistry.
It's a one-sided forced chemistry.
Yeah, it's fun.
You know who Superman is? Fucking HUD. HUD is just fucking dumbass.
He's so great. All right.
So how about Cloverfield as sort of the extended Cloverfield universe? Did you guys see 10 Cloverfield Lane or the Cloverfield Paradox?
I have not seen the Paradox. I did see 10 Cloverfield Lane, and initially I was disappointed just because I thought it would be more tied into the original. I didn't quite know that it wasn't a sequel. It was just kind of a universe thing. But it turned out to be a really good movie. Like, John Goodman's great in that. The whole movie is like really, it's a good horror movie. I think it's fun, but it's not really... I don't know. Doesn't feel too tied to the this movie at all.
Yeah, I mean, they sort of described it as a blood relative to Cloverfield, but not a literal sequel. And that's, I mean, and the other movie is as well. You know, they're sort of like in the universe of Cloverfield. In fact, they sort of refer to it as the Cloververse, but they're certainly not direct sequels. So they do share certain elements to it. I liked 10 Cloverfield Lane a lot. Yeah, I also really like Mary Elizabeth Winstead. I did see the Cloverfield Paradox because it came out on Netflix, and it was sort of like came out on Netflix, like surprisingly, all of a sudden, like they
announced that it was going to be available in a Super Bowl commercial, that it would be available after the Super Bowl.
Right,
you found out about it with like 90 minutes to spare or something like that.
Oh, wow. Yeah, which is kind of crazy, and I don't know that it worked out for them because, whoa, like, where's all the buildup, right? I mean, did you guys watch that movie?
I have not.
No, I haven't seen it.
I didn't like it. It's a weird movie. I actually want to watch it again. It's kind of interesting. I mean, it's all about, it all takes place on a space station called Cloverfield Space Station. The world is in a massive energy crisis, and the nations of the world have like teamed up to test out a particle accelerator on this space station. So it's an international crew with the hopes that it will solve the energy crisis. And there's a lot of, you know, people who are totally against this because they think it's going to open up, you know, portals into parallel universes, which to me sounds a lot like they're just worried about like Doom or Half-Life, you know? Where all these terrible creatures are going to come rolling in to our universe. And, well, spoiler alert, that's sort of what happens at the end. And so that's, but it's a weird, it's just a weird movie.
It's not tied into Cloverfield, this film, in any real direct way though, right?
Is it a prequel? Because that's where this monster comes from?
No, it actually takes place in 2028.
Like, how is it related?
Oh, I had to go onto YouTube and watch people like pull out Easter eggs and viral marketing stuff just to figure out how these movies intersect. And essentially, it's like these three movies are three alternate realities that are exposed by the particle accelerator in the Cloverfield paradox that brings the creature from another dimension into all three separate timelines and time periods. And I'm like, right. So
yeah, it's going too deep.
It's just like, no, you what?
Yeah.
But whatever.
It sounds like a bunch of thinly connected bullshit.
It's actually just a bunch of phooey. And when you think about it, the development of those two movies, they were like, you know, they basically took scripts that were different IP and then made them into Cloverfield IP. Yeah. Do whatever you want. I'm not all that interested in having to get on the internet and do hours and hours worth of research just to figure out what the fuck is going on.
Right.
It doesn't matter. I think especially in monster movies, like people think it matters more that where the monster comes from. Like to some degree, it's a good speculative, but I don't think it's as necessary to explain it as much. In this one, they don't at all. In Cloverfield, they don't explain where the monster comes from and don't explain like how it got there and what's going on, which I thought was a pretty good.
No. But they did, I mean, the last scene in the movie, you know, Coney Island, you see something fall into the ocean. And I was always led to believe that, oh, that's the monster. It's like, where it came from, outer space. And right. But apparently, no, that's actually a satellite from
Japan.
From Japan, you know, from that company, with the oil tanker.
The oil company.
It's like, okay, whatever. Forget it. Now, I think the only movie that actually comes close to being like a sequel or really more part of this movie is Super 8, which actually takes place like 40 years before, right?
Right.
Because it seems very similar.
That's a great movie.
But J.J. Abrams says, no, it's not the same monster.
It's a very similar looking monster, though, in terms of the monster design.
Yeah.
They had the same models that they had 3D models they worked up. Like, let's just rehash the.
Probably.
Start. Yeah. Don't start from scratch. Let's just use those. Super 8's great. Love it.
In terms of the development, so I guess J.J. Abrams wanted to make a monster movie. That was kind of the gist of it. Apparently, I think he was in Japan.
J.J. Abrams with his kid. Yeah. And they were in a toy store.
And they were seeing a bunch of the Godzilla models, and they're saying, oh, that'd be kind of fun. We should do. Yeah, the American version of Godzilla. Better than Roland Emmerich did it in, what was that, 1999? I forget when Godzilla came out.
It was 98.
They seemed to remake Godzilla every like 10 years.
Like Godzilla was like an 85. It was a salamander or something like that. What was it? It was a Gila monster. It was so lame. And Matthew Broderick? Really? That's your star?
Yeah, I don't like the new Godzilla. I don't like either. He looks too like alligator like.
I think he looks like a badass. I think he looks like
you
a
think
badass.
So? He looks too he's not as upright as I want him to be. He's like too like hunched over. Like the front of him is like an alligator.
That's I think it's the Jurassic Park-ness of it. Like it's more like a dinosaur, but
it looks more realistic in the sense of
looks better than the
60s? No, but that's what I want Godzilla to look like. Toho? So it looks more like an animal, like it would, like if it was a radioactive animal that was like mutated and grew to be Titan size. But I like the 60s Godzilla. He's fantastic. Like that's the.
I like this Godzilla because he does look like the 60s Godzilla, but more animated, more reptilian. Like that. He probably a bit more reptilian, but also. Dude needs to relax. He always looks angry.
And then the other interesting thing is this movie to me is also sort of a modern updating of Jaws in a way, because the idea of how the monster is handled. The monster is only on screen for 2 minutes and 37 seconds during the entire runtime of this film. So you only get a lot of quick glimpses of the creature. And the clips that you have of the monster when the monster is far away or when you see it run between buildings, all that is really effective. So it's fun and interesting, and it keeps you very engaged because you are curious to see what this thing, you know, is this thing going to be revealed at some point, right? A la Jaws. So it's the same kind of model with, you know, the idea that not seeing it is scarier than seeing it. And I think that piece of it, or that part of it and how they handle it, is really well done.
I think that's one of the best things about the movie. And I'm glad that they did that because it makes the movie much more memorable. You're always straining to see. Like, I literally remember watching the movie for the first time and like leaning forward, trying to glimpse that extra bit of, you know, this monster, trying to, yeah, well, what does it actually look like?
Yeah.
I'm only seeing like little bits of pieces, just a flash here and there. Like what is it? And yeah, and that's what made Jaws so great. And that's why also for like the movies today, you know, King Kong and Godzilla and all, but they're impressive from the special effects point of view, but they're not exactly scary because yet you see the monster all the time.
Yeah. There's no like suspense or any sort of like disbelief of what it might be, or, you know, like imagination or anything like that.
Right. There's no real tension or anything there.
Yeah. And throughout the movies, playing into that is the notion of the shaky cam footage and how the point of view is all from this group of friends. So Matt Reeves was talking about making it. He's like, oh, like most of your monster movies are all like, you have this like very typical scenario. Monster shows up and you get a view of the monster attacking. Then you get a view of the military mobilizing, you get a view of the president doing his thing. You get a view of scientists doing their thing, trying to analyze. But then like, you also see the monster attack and there's these people running from the scene, right? He's like, I'm just going to focus on those people and what's their experience of this whole situation. And so it's really interesting. They don't have that much information. They don't know what's going on. They don't have, like, I don't know what that monster is. You only get the glimpse of their view and you don't get all the additional picture. And so as an audience member, you're like, you do want more from like, okay, what is this? Where did it come from? How is this attacking? And like, it's really well done too. Like, I thought it was great with that.
Yeah.
This is the genius of the film, because I remember being a kid, you know, having watched, you know, Godzilla and stuff like that. And then just letting my imagination run wild and like being in the park and like just thinking, oh my God, what if like a huge, gigantic monster just started walking into my view? How would I react? You know, like,
yeah,
that's fun. I think it's great. Like, who gives a shit what the government scientists say?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and the other thing is the shots that they choose to do the quick reveal the monster a couple times, a couple of them are really effective, right? The one where it bends its head down and kind of screams when the military is shooting it and they're running right underneath it, that's really well done. One of the early, the early sequences where they see it from a distance and it's going between the buildings and you see the building crumbling and you see just like a lot of tentacles, you're not sure exactly what the hell it is.
Yeah.
It does a really good job of building suspense in terms of the creature design itself. And you're really curious to see, you really, really want to see it clearly by the end of the movie. I'm not sure that you actually get that opportunity truthfully ever, but yeah, that's okay. I think it's
better though. For the better. I'm glad they don't have a full, you know, shot of the creature.
Let me ask you a question. What is your personal favorite shot of the creature in the movie? Like, what scene?
Probably the skyscraper one Dave was describing, when it's kind of climbing up this skyscraper. I think it's when it's first, maybe there are launch missiles at it also. And then just kind of like slithers aside too. I thought it was really cool.
Dave? Yeah. To me, the one where the head comes down and goes like, rawr, and it keeps walking when they're ducking into the subway. That's the moment I think it's really, really good.
Okay. Mine is when they're on the roof of Beth's building and they're coming, they're going from her building back over to the other building after they've like rescued her. And they're looking down, I think it's Central Park West, and here comes the monster down like between the skyscrapers.
Yeah.
And to me, like, that is the one where I'm just like, oh, fucking shit. If I'm them, like, if I'm TJ Miller, like, at that point, I just like stop in my tracks and I'm like, I'm sorry, but I have to watch this. That's how awe-inspiring that shot was.
Yeah, I agree. Well done.
Director's Corner.
So how about Matt Reeves as a director? What do you guys think of Matt Reeves?
Yeah. I like him. I haven't seen like as many of his movies. I did enjoy I enjoyed this one and I enjoyed the Planet of the Apes movies. He hasn't done that much yet. So, Colin, I know you saw the new Batman. So,
yes, I loved the pallbearer. And actually, I don't really remember the pallbearer that much. I think I wanted it to, I think I wanted to like it a lot more than I actually did. But yes, you know, I've seen the two Planet of the Apes movies that he did. But yes, I did just watch The Batman, and I don't know if I can tell you what Matt Reeves's particular style is, but I can say this. I really liked The Batman a lot. I think he directed the shit out of it. It looks amazing. It moves at a very good pace. And it's almost 3 hours long.
Oh, wow.
I was never looking at the clock. I was completely engaged. I mean, I have to say at this point, like, this is his masterpiece.
The Batman or Cloverfield?
The Batman.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Yeah, I'll say I'm a pretty big fan at this point, looking at the filmography. So Let Me In, I think, is actually a really good horror movie. It's an interesting kind of, you know, half horror, half character study. Where I really noticed him was probably the Planet of the Apes movies, because that property is not something that I, you know, had a really fond association with as a kid. In fact, I didn't really like those movies. Like, the, you know, they made 7 or 8 of them or something back in the day. I was even kind of resistant or reluctant to watch the new Planet of the Apes movies. So I'm like, I'll just give it a shot. And I think that is a trilogy. I think it's a really impressively strong movie. And then I think the two films that he directed, I just think that his ability to generate these rich characters out of, you know, CG monkeys I think he does a really great job with it.
Yeah.
And then I actually think that in War for the Planet of the Apes in particular, he gets a really great dark performance out of Woody Harrelson. So I think he's, and so I, and his movies, both those movies in particular, feel super tight, really well paced. And I'll agree with Colin, which is, I thought The Batman was pretty great, actually. So maybe the second or third best Batman film. So definitely interested where he's going to go, because I would say that at the moment, you know, if Matt Reeves is making a new movie, it's definitely something that I want to go see.
Yeah, I totally agree. He's on my list of exciting new directors. He's been around a while, but it's still
exciting new directors. He's our age.
Yeah, and, I know. but like, actually, if you look,
he was at USC when I was there.
Yeah, but if you look at the movies he's made what of his style, maybe 5 movies in the last, you know, 15 years.
Yeah, not directed much, but
he did some TV, and of course, obligatory Homicide: Life on the Street reference. He did direct one episode in the 90s of that. So, kudos, Matt Reeves.
The interesting thing I learned about Matt Reeves is that he actually became friends with J.J. Abrams when they were 13 years old, and they were they met at a public access cable station which was airing their short films. And then when they were 15 or 16, Steven Spielberg hired them to transfer some of his own Super 8 films over to videotape.
Huh.
So they're very much collaborators.
Yeah. And this does have a Abrams feel to it too. I feel like he was greatly involved in the production of it and in the creation, not just a...
He is. Yeah. I mean, this is, I think, and that's the thing. I don't think really people really knew who Matt Reeves was when Cloverfield came out. It was a J.J. Abrams property.
Yeah.
You know, it very much feels like it.
Yeah. And I'm a big fan of, like, most stuff he does. I wasn't really that into Lost, but a lot of he just does action, like, really well, I think.
I loved 95% of Lost and was very engaged.
I liked the first season, then it just kept going. It just kept going on and on.
Did not find the ending to be particularly satisfying.
I don't know.
I liked the last episode a lot, or at least the last 5 minutes. I thought it was very emotional.
Hmm. Well, we can agree to disagree.
Yeah. Okay. Dave doesn't like any of that sentimental bullshit.
Well, I never got into I wasn't that into the internet sleuthing and digging deep in it. Like, I don't know. It's just too much work for watching a TV show.
Exactly. I'm not totally into that. So.
Casting call.
Well, I was going to say, so the cast...
It's not a lot of known actors previous.
No, not a lot of them are immediately recognizable as maybe bigger name stars.
Yeah, basically T.J. Miller and Lizzie Kaplan. Everyone else I don't really know.
Jessica Lucas, I remember from Evil Dead, and she was also in Gotham.
I
really liked her. She did a good job with the role. T.J. Miller is definitely the star of the film, if there is any. He's a little bit annoying, a little bit goofy, but he's the narrator to some point, and you're following along with him. So
TJ Miller also has such a distinctive voice to me that as soon as he started talking, I'm like, oh, TJ Miller's in this. You know, yeah. I didn't realize that, but it was immediately recognizable to me.
It's his film debut.
Yeah.
Yeah. To me, it always just sounds like Ehrlich Bachman from Silicon Valley. So,
yeah.
Like that's the, which I don't know.
Avianto.
Avianto, yeah. Do you like TJ Miller?
I do.
I do like TJ Miller. Yeah.
I think
he's, I think he has really, really good comic timing, yeah. Honestly.
He's got good energy. Mm. He can be like, he's one of those that can be annoying too. Like, so I can, mm-hmm. he can go too far. So he's borderline. And this one, I thought he was fine. I thought he was good.
He's fun in the Deadpool movies. I do like him in the Deadpool movies.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess that's the thing with TJ.
Like, I love the moment where he goes to Deadpool. He's like, I would go with you, but I don't want to.
I think in large doses, he just annoys me.
Yeah.
As far as the other cast members, yes, Jessica Lucas, who played Lily. I had forgotten she played Olivia in Evil Dead, who died too soon. And then Lizzie Kaplan. Like, I don't know if you guys are really that familiar with her, but I'm a big fan. I mean, she's been a lot of TV and movies that I like Mean Girls. She was in Hot Tub Time Machine and some TV shows like True Blood and Masters of Sex and Party Down, which was a really great comedy. So I've always been a big fan of hers.
I wasn't that familiar with her.
No.
I think she's the MVP of this movie, probably because I don't like TJ Miller. But
because she explodes?
No. The one person from the cast who actually, I think, sort of shines and is not just as Lisa Schwartzbaum from Entertainment Weekly said, she the characters were vapid 20-something nincompoops, and the acting was appropriately unmemorable. I think that's a little much for Lizzie. I think she actually did sort of shine. Everyone else I totally agree with.
I know. Her role was just more, like, annoyed. Anything else? Like, I don't know. She did fine with
well,
that.
Well,
like,
you were talking about the chemistry between her and HUD. Yeah.
She's definitely great. Like, I mean, she's the one who brings it, and she's like, does the, like, I'm so annoyed with you look. So,
which I love.
Yeah, no, it's great. Like I like her. So, like, I'm not, no complaints.
All right.
Yeah, she has a little bit of a Zooey Deschanel edge.
Yeah.
Okay. Anybody else from the cast that you guys want to highlight? We didn't really talk about it. Many people, but.
It's not a star-studded cast.
No. I think they're all pretty much nobodies.
They probably did that on purpose too. Like, I think it adds again. Yeah, to
no,
the
they
film.
Did. They did.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. No. It's done to great effect because just seeing these people who you may not be intimately familiar with allows you to be immersed in the situation versus thinking, oh, there's Harrison Ford running from a monster.
Yeah. Right? Exactly.
Yeah.
You don't have to
worry about that.
The star is going to defeat it. You don't have he's going to attack it, whatever it might be.
Makes it feel a little bit more realistic somehow.
Yeah, I was going to say anyone can die. It just feels like you're dropping in on a group of people that you don't know who are at a party and a monster attacks. And what happens?
And that's, you follow along. Yeah, and that's the thing. It's found footage. These are strangers. These are people who you don't know. So, yeah, it perfectly works.
All right, Marcus, you want to hit us with a plot summary?
A group of friends are having a going-away party when a creature the size of a skyscraper attacks New York City. They record the night using a handheld video camera as they attempt to rescue a friend while the city crumbles around them.
Opening questions. Marcus, what do you got?
How did Jessica Lucas do all this in heels? It just seemed like a little...
I know. At one point, I think there's like 20 minutes left and the camera pans down and she's wearing these...
Heels.
Like 5-inch heels, and I'm like
what? Ah! Like, but then, how can that even be possible?
Oh, I missed that actually.
Yeah.
But like, what you see this in movies all the time, and women are running around in heels. I don't know how they do it.
Jumping between skyscrapers. I think my only question is, how long would it take to evacuate Manhattan? There's 1.7 million people there. It seems like it would take quite a while to get those many people off the island.
12 hours.
All right.
Colin, what do you got?
I want to know what those creatures are, the little small creatures that drop off of the giant monster. What
the
are
parasites?
Those things? Yeah.
Yeah, what, so apparently those are parasites. That's what they're referred to.
So they're like lice?
Yeah, something like that. It's like suckers onto the animal. So like fleas or lice or...
And where do these parasites come from?
Where does the monster come from?
Where the... This is a
the land of monsters. So now, there are parasites.
Well, now, so I read that it was kind of funny because I think even HUD says this. He's when they're in the tunnels and they're just, he was asking like, oh, where did this come from? Like, oh, is it outer space? Did it come from a trench deep in the ocean? Which I immediately thought of kaiju and, you know,
Pacific Rim
and all that stuff. But apparently not. It actually came from another dimension. So now that makes a little more sense. I guess they just tagged along.
Yeah, as I say, they didn't seem as parasitic. They seemed like a little more controlled by the monster because they drop. They all started dropping at once.
I know. And so that's what I was thinking too. Yeah.
It does seem convenient.
Well, so let me ask you a question then. So, Colin, what's your overall take on sort of the mythology of what happened here?
Well, I'll just go with what I read, and that a portal was opened up between two different dimensions, and this creature came through, and it was, it landed somewhere, in New York Harbor. And apparently, because the way that they designed this creature, they wanted it to seem, because it's just literally like rampaging through the streets of New York. And so they sort of said they wanted it to, they wanted to create an immature creature that was like suffering from separation anxiety.
Yeah.
So it's like it's a baby and it doesn't know where it is. And it's like,
it's scared and disoriented.
Very anxious, scared, disoriented. And it's just lashing out. And so that makes sense to me.
What I was thinking is that if you look at some of the sequencing in terms of when they put the viral videos and stuff out, I think it's a satellite falls into the ocean. It disturbs this creature that is on the bottom of the ocean already somehow. Then it awakens and it follows the oil rig up and destroys the oil rig. And then from there comes towards the city. So the only thing that doesn't really make sense to me is the dimensional portal thing. I think that was just thought up after the fact when they needed a third Paradox or a third Cloverfield movie.
That seems more logical, except like, what is this? Why did a satellite, crashing to the Earth, which is, it's not really that big. Why would that do it? I could see where if you're drilling for oil and it was underneath the, in some trench somewhere underneath the floor of the ocean and it was awoken that way, maybe. But the satellite, no.
Yeah, I don't think it matters.
I don't buy that at all.
I'm a fan of just not caring and like, okay, there's a monster attacking. Who cares where it came from? It's here attacking.
Yeah, this is not a movie that is looking for an explanation.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, to me, it made more sense.
Specifically.
When you saw something come out of the sky and land into the ocean, to me, it was like, okay, that made sense. It was like some alien and it was smaller and then it grew to like immense size and then attacked the city. And to me, the simplest explanation is the best.
All right.
Yeah, so the hammer down protocol, which is what the military was going to employ to
hammer down
as a last resort to try to deal with this creature. What kind of weapon do you think was involved in the hammer down protocol?
They would nuke New York.
I don't see him nuking New York
though. Well, obviously, but it's not. I don't see a monster attacking New York either.
I'd say fuel air explosive or the Moab. I think they would try dropping those first before they went nuke.
I was thinking the same. I was thinking it would be the Moab, which is called the Massive Ordnance Air Blast or Mother of All Bombs. So I did a little research on fuel air explosives. Essentially, it's the most powerful conventional weapon in the world. It's a thermobaric device that yields the equivalent of 44 tons of TNT using about 7 tons of a new type of high explosive. And it works by detonating in midair, and then most of the damage is inflicted by a supersonic shockwave and extremely high temperatures.
I think that would be effective against it too.
I think you go Moab first, and if that doesn't work, then like a small tactical nuke.
Right. The one thing that's interesting though is the reality around them not being able to penetrate the skin of this creature with some of the armament they have is, it makes you wonder exactly what this thing's made out of. Because if you figure that you have tanks that are firing, the equivalent of depleted uranium shells at something, I mean, it's you would think that it would punch through flesh on a creature.
Yeah,
so I don't know if they were doing it damage or not, but
yeah.
Now, if it comes from another dimension, then, geez, that could be anything. You know, like the laws of physics in other dimensions would be different than in ours, which, if that's the case, how could this thing even exist in our dimension? Like, why wouldn't it just immediately explode or dissolve?
Dude,
you're
breaking my brain over here, man.
That's why I don't like dimensional stuff's a little too much.
Yeah.
It Colin, is. What do you think the parasites were thinking when they're getting shot at by the tank?
What the parasites were thinking?
Yeah.
Oh, they're using artillery on us.
I thought, Marcus, you were setting up for some sort of a joke. I'm like, where is this going? Is there a Cloverfield joke book that I missed out on?
Colin got there.
Okay. Gotta get the Die Hard reference in. Okay, so I had one question. I did note that the Rampage starts on May 22nd, which is also Andy McGowan's birthday.
That's true.
So do you believe this film is simply an extended allegory to the terror and destruction that Andy McGowan has wrought on the world?
Obviously.
Yes.
Yeah, I would assume so. And then my other question is, why is Rob such a moron? I mean, this Beth girl is pretty hot. She wants to be with him. Sure, he's going to go to Japan in a couple weeks, but he closes the deal and then he doesn't call her? Yeah. What are you thinking, moron?
Yeah, I don't know. Very strange. I did not understand the Beth and Rob connection of like, they liked each other for the longest time, but then they finally, as soon as he's about to leave, he gets, I don't know, it didn't make any sense.
Yeah,
I think what happened there was that, and this probably explains the whole movie, like, why didn't he call her back? It's been weeks. I think he got separation anxiety, and as a result, he projected this creature into New York, and it's on a rampage, which is kind of silly when you think about it, but that's actually the plot of an Anne, what's her name movie?
Anne Hathaway
movie. Yeah. What's that movie called? I saw it.
Colossal. That's Colossal. Have you seen that movie?
I have. Yeah.
That movie's awesome. Actually, it's surprisingly good. And
it's
so weird. It has a couple of very strange tonal shifts in it. Like really, really strange tonal shifts. That movie. It's fascinating.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. All right. Any other opening questions for you guys?
I do have one and we can discuss it now, I guess, is the shaky cam footage. What did you guys think?
No, I honestly had a little bit of a problem with it watching it. And in fact, I was watching it with my wife and we had to stop watching it. She basically said, I can't take it anymore. So we had to turn the TV off because she was getting nauseous watching it.
Yeah.
And when I switched to watching it on my computer, it was a little bit easier for me. But the shaky cam found footage thing for me stylistically, it's not a fit, right? I don't like to see too much of that. And so when the shaky cam stuff starts going in, I just be like, okay, well, I'll just kind of look off to the side for a second until they finish their run and then things stabilize a little bit. So it's one of the problems I have with found footage films in general. It's not really my preferred genre, and it's specifically because of the need to create all these sort of handheld or the, you know, force the dialogue around how they would get these actual images.
Yeah.
My favorite found footage film is probably Chronicle, because Chronicle does a nice job of eliminating how they're handling that by giving the characters, you know, telekinetic abilities that allow them to position the camera so it's a little bit smoother. So that's the one thing. But I myself am not a fan of the found footage genre.
I like Chronicle too, but I'm just rolling my eyes at the whole, like, here's how we studied the camera.
Right. Well, I mean, yeah, because they realize they're like, it's better than watching someone do the handheld shit constantly, right?
So I have no problem with shaking him. It doesn't make me sick. I would rather see something of a more composed and steady image, sure, but it's not a problem for me. Although, apparently it's a problem for Roger Ebert, because he dubbed it La Shakily Queasy Cam.
Yeah, I wish in this one they just did it a little less. I don't think you have to be as realistic as it is. I think you can give the effect, give the general feel for it, and then just do some image stabilization. Don't have it be quite as bad. And people are going to forgive it. It's not that big of a deal that, like, no, the shot wouldn't be that steady while he's running. Like, who cares? Like, I think it's a movie. You get this sense, like, I don't know. Don't try and be as realistic as you can.
I like it because I think it just lends to the realism. Yeah. And again, I don't have any problems with it. It doesn't annoy me. Yeah. So that's me. Now, Dave, I do have a question for you, because I think in the genre of the found footage films, I think the the movie that supposedly is the original was a 1980 cult horror film called Cannibal Holocaust. Have you seen this film?
I have, yes.
And what is your impression?
Well, it's actually, that particular movie is a fairly horrible movie because they...
Horrible in what way?
I can't remember the different violence. It's just, it's over the top violence. But what's really bad about that movie is they show actual animal killings, like real animal killings that they
did.
So they chop up a snake and a turtle and some other stuff, and they leave the footage in the movie. Yeah. And so that's one of the reasons why it was part of a wave of videos. I think they were called labeled video nasties or something like that were banned in the UK and other places in the world and gave them certain notoriety. So that's one of the reasons why that movie is well known.
So sort of in the same vein as Faces of Death, except that was like documentary.
Yeah.
But that was a combination of documentary and then a bunch of stuff they made up. Yeah.
Right.
No, I'm very well versed in all this, all the 80s horror stuff, as you can imagine.
Why am I not surprised?
Yes. Then just to continue that a little bit, I mean, so how about found footage, I guess, not necessarily just the shaky cam, but what about the style of film? Do you guys like it? Because I'm not terribly a fan myself.
I think it's kind of, I think it's a good, like, I wouldn't want to watch tons of them, but I think it's a good hook when it works. Like, I like Blair Witch. I mean, a lot of it's also is shaky cam too, especially just since they kind of go together.
But like, yeah.
I think I would have liked Wreck if I saw the original.
Some of the camera stuff in Wreck is very, or it seems very familiar as a comparison to what you have in Cloverfield, honestly. So
a little bit.
The found footage stuff that we've seen.
I think they did a better job in Wreck because it was like supposedly a professional cameraman, right? So I think that works out well too. Like you had a...
That's a good point. Yeah.
Whereas in Cloverfield, it was T.J. Miller who was behind, like what he says that he was behind the camera for a third of what you see on the screen.
Oh, really?
If you can believe that.
So he was he was the actual cameraman? I was wondering if that was true or not.
That's what he says, yeah.
Or is he standing behind the guy with the camera?
No, he says he shot it. He shot a third of what we see.
Oh, well.
All right, well, you want to jump into this and talk about a few key scenes?
Let's do it.
So I will say the opening scrawl kind of credits, I think is really actually effective and well done. The whole, you know, retrieved Department of Defense in sight, formerly known as Central Park. So formerly known as Central Park. So it makes me think, okay, well then that raises the question like, well, what happened to Central Park? Like, what are we going to see?
Hook.
You know,
and
that
great hook.
And it ties into the hammer down protocol thing at the end. So all that is really interesting.
I'm guessing they did end up using a nuke then.
Probably, yeah. And then there is the Dharma Initiative logo that's there that you see very briefly. So apparently there's lots of little flashes of the, you know, the Dharma logo is from Lost. And then I guess when they're doing the transition between what you're seeing with the current creature and then the stuff that was on the tape before, because, you know, he does mention that he had a day that he had with Beth that he's taping over. Apparently when they're going through those transitions, Matt Reeves put in little images of other monster movies. Like you have the Beast from 2000 or 20,000 Phantoms is in it. The other little flashes, King Kong shows up at one point towards the end when the helicopter is.
Yeah, the ants from Them.
Yeah. So he buried a bunch of little tiny subliminal monster movie flashes into the film. So there's lots of little Easter eggs as you go through it.
But I have to ask you about that.
You're never going to see it though.
Right. So.
Why bother?
It's subliminal. You're never going to see it. You literally have to freeze frame it.
Right.
Why bother?
Yeah.
Why bother doing that?
They're bored. He's just making a movie. Thought to throw it in there. I don't know. To me, it's kind of...
It's to create notoriety for it, right? I mean, that's the only reason you do it.
There's people out there who love it, so they throw them a bone.
There's a lot of that J.J. Abrams universe Easter eggs in this movie, and like Slusho. Apparently, that someone's wearing a Slusho T-shirt. Apparently, and I only know this because again, I did some research. You would never know this from actually watching the movie. But big question in my mind was: Rob is going to Japan because he's just been, you know, promoted to be VP of his company. We don't know what his company is. We don't know what his job is, other than he's a new VP. And Rob is about 28 years old, I think, I'm going to say. What is he VP of? I mean, it sounds like he's like, I don't know, the VP of just like annoying millennials, but like, what is his company? And it turns out that he's the new VP of Slusho Japan. But you would never know that from actually just watching this movie.
It doesn't matter. Yeah, like, I don't know.
Yeah. And I have no interest or investment in the J.J. Abrams Easter egg universe.
That's the thing. Slush like,
I just don't care about any of that.
Exactly. I don't either. But apparently there's a ton of this stuff in there.
Well, and then the other thing I think is funny is, so they give the T.J. Miller character the name HUD, right? Which, of course, it could be short for heads up display. So that part of it, I think, is sort of interesting, right? You're getting your first person perspective,
or
just a little on the nose, but whatever.
Humanistic underground dwellers.
Yes, just, you need a C in front of that one for the chat.
There's two branches. There's the cannibals, and then there's the non-cannibals. And apparently, HUD is one of the non-cannibals.
The opening stuff at the party, I think, is fine. I think the main thing they're trying to do is show you the relationship between Rob and Beth, and there's some tension that's going on, but you're just really waiting for the monster to show up at that point.
Yeah.
Which happens pretty quickly.
You get to meet HUD and his little crush on Marlena. So,
yeah, he does have a crush on Marlena. You're right.
I love that. Also, it reminded me very much of Gross Point Blank with the Jenny Miller. He's like, hey, Marlena.
Oh, right.
I'm not a professional. I'm HUD.
Hug?
No. HUD, I'm Robin Lilly's friend. We met like several times before.
Oh, yeah. You have the camera in front of your face. It's probably why it is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Here.
What's going on? Totally.
Yeah, cool.
We met three times. He's like,
exactly right. I know.
I did your precious metal paper.
Yeah.
All I was thinking when he was doing this is like, you're going to go pick up on a girl that you have a crush on. Why in God's name are you filming it?
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, I mean, there are many moments where you wonder, would you really still have the camera in your hand at this point?
No, you would not. No, I know. There's like the whole movie, and there's a throwaway line in there, like on the Brooklyn Bridge. He's like, you know, somebody needs to document this. People are going to want to know what was really happening. It's like,
I think that's like somewhat valid. I think people would, like, especially now with cell phones and stuff like that, you'd have like so much footage of this shit. That could be unbelievable. Yeah.
Well, that was the thing, like when they're at the party, and I'm just going like, you know, this was like, you know, how many years ago was this?
2008. Okay. So it's like the iPhone was 2007. So it was like right around that 2008, 2007.
Yeah. Cause I'm going like, oh my God, there's a holding like a Steadicam, you know, or a Handycam. Yeah. Like, good Lord. if you show this to your children, they'd be like, oh, what is that? Why doesn't he just use his phone?
Yeah.
Right. Well, I do like, so when the building starts to shake and they go outside, or I think they run to the roof and they see the explosion. I was wondering, what do you think that explosion is supposed to be? Like, what's causing an explosion that big? I was trying to think what that could be. It's like stepping on a gas truck somewhere or something. I don't know what would make an explosion go like that.
Like,
that wasn't Atlanta, because it already landed in the harbor, right? Like, it wasn't it landing. I don't know.
Could it have been the oil tanker like blowing up?
I don't know.
So I think it must have been something like that. Because initially you said there was an earthquake, right?
Yeah. But it was like, there was an earthquake. Huge explosion.
Yeah.
And I was wondering about myself.
Is the Statue of Liberty head thrown from that explosion? Think those things are directly tied together? Is that what they're trying to insinuate?
No, because it wasn't until they evacuated the building. They were down on the street when the head came.
Oh, they're down the street.
That was after. Yeah. So what I think is that the monster came up, destroyed this tanker, causing a massive explosion of the tanker, and then climbed up onto Liberty Statue Island. Liberty.
Yeah.
Climbed up to the Statue of Liberty, pulled the head off and chopped it. But I will say this. It's really interesting because everyone's like, oh, let's go up the roof and see, you know, if we can see it. And everyone like goes up there and then you see this explosion and all this debris starts coming their way. And people like genuinely panic.
Run.
And they start freaking out. And I thought that was really good, a genuine moment of surprise and people just panicking.
No, yeah, I do like that they show people kind of losing their mind a bit and just running around, not sure exactly what to do. So the response in some respects, I guess, feels realistic for what it is. But I think it's pretty well done.
Yeah,
I agree. And I think that's that first person view, the shaky cam or whatever we want to call that, does add to that whole effect too. So like the whole movie does that really well of limited information, limited views of things. It makes it a lot more tense.
Yeah, and then you do see the head come flying in. And again, that's just a fantastic piece of imagery. And apparently created that image partially in response to the movie poster for the film Escape from New York. Because in the poster, you have Snake Plissken and he's running down the street and you have the Statue of Liberty head in the middle of the street.
Yeah.
And I know that poster very well because when I step out into my garage, I see it every single day. So because I have it on the wall of my garage.
And it was great. It's a great visual. And I also like, after it comes to rest, everyone like crowds around it and they do bring out their phones. So
do they?
Is it phones or is it no? Or is it phones or is it cameras? Or I'm not sure what. Or
you would have just a like you'd the, have a camera the phone
pre-iPhone. Yeah, so camera phones. Yeah,
we had camera phones.
And it was like
it just sucked.
Of course, of course they're doing that, right? And that was that was very much intentional as a commentary on society.
One funny thing is they did have to, they increased the size of it's not the actual size of the Statue of Liberty because no one believed it was that small. And they made it much larger than real life.
Oh, seriously? So like the head is not actually that big in real life?
Yeah, I think they did initial one with it being smaller.
Well, I think they increased the size by, was it 50% in the trailer, right? Isn't that what they did? Or did they show it in the trailer and then people thought it was too small?
I think they showed the real one in the trailer and then they made it bigger I forget which one it was. They think.
Yeah.
That's interesting because I really did think that it was a lot bigger. Like it would be that size.
Have you ever been up in the crown of the Statue of Liberty?
I have not.
I was hanging out with Wolverine and we were up there and Magneto was after us.
Well, I actually have and I was not a member of the X-Men, so I just bought a ticket. Yeah, we did it as a walkthrough with the family. I didn't realize how I expected it, you know, when you see it from a distance, right? You think it's this big open space. There's going to be a platform you can walk around inside. No, it's like super cramped and you're bent over and you're on a stairwell and you're kind of, edging your way through and it's actually super cramped. So it makes sense to me that the head in this movie ends up being the size that it is. But Colin, good to know that you remember the X-Men. What's your power, by the way? What's your mutant ability?
Oh, my mutant ability? I don't know.
You can crush.
Your mutant ability is to be extra fussy about your dinner choices.
You can crush a French onion soup at 3 a.m.
Not anymore. Not anymore. I don't know. Something happens when you hit middle age and suddenly you just can't eat. You can't eat as much, but you can't also lose weight either. It's really sort of weird.
So one other thing, when they're out on the street, this is pretty soon they have their first encounter with the creature in terms of they see it from a distance. And this is where I think you see it moving between buildings. And just one thing I really do appreciate about this movie is a lot of times when you have the really large monster, for whatever reason, they look like they're moving in slow motion. Like even in the Marvel films, when Ant-Man becomes Giant Man and he's moving around, he still feels like he's moving really slow. So it's still something that's happening today. But in this film, they give the creature, I think, some realistic speed, right? It's moving along at a pretty good clip. Stuff's getting destroyed. It's acting very erratically. And so I think the scale and the speed of the creature is one of the things that sets this movie apart from a lot of other big monster movies, because I just think that it handles that piece of it much more effectively.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I think the tentacles too. Tentacles are really like whip around and like do massive damage too. So I think that adds to it.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't look like it has a plan or clear intent. So I think the idea that it's a baby that's lashing out, not really sure what it should be doing, makes sense to me. One thing about the early scenes too. So when they have one of the buildings collapse, I was surprised and actually kind of taken back a little bit to the 9/11 imagery. So when they're inside building and you see the dust going by and it makes it effectively, darkens out the entire window. That to me is one of the more iconic images that you have when you have some of the footage that happened on 9/11. So I was kind of surprised to see that, I guess. And I was maybe thinking that maybe, and I know they might've done that purposefully. They do mention that in some respects, they think this film could be viewed as a commentary on 9/11 in terms of the post 9/11 anxieties that exist. But I don't just that particular view of seeing the window and seeing all the dust come in. It's very, very like specific, at least for me, in terms of what it makes me think of.
I totally agree.
I mean, yes. I don't know if it's intentional or not. However, it has to be at least subconscious because we've all seen those images. You know, this is now, they probably filmed it, 6, 7 years later. So yeah, it's extremely evocative. And, you know, I thought about it immediately when I saw it the first time. And not everyone was really super excited about it. There was a lot of negative criticism about it. I mean, Roger Ebert said, you know, it had unmistakable evocations of 9/11. But, you know, Scott Foundas of the LA Weekly, he said that the use of those scenes, he called it cheap and opportunistic. I think someone from the New York Times called it tacky. I think it's highly effective. It was so close to 9/11. I think if you look at it today, maybe it's, you know, you wouldn't have quite those same feelings, the same emotions about it.
It's just interesting because prior to 9/11, if a building was going down, I wouldn't really think about the kind of the dust cloud or the particle cloud that gets created and pushed forward. Now, when I see that, I think very specifically about 9/11. So that's the thing for me that's kind of like, whoa.
And I wonder if there's like a realism factor now, like all... If people continue to do movies like that, they'll include it because, like, oh, that's what happens.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Know. Because, because now you know exactly what does happen. I mean, every time you see a building collapse or fall over, especially nowadays with like monster movies, they know exactly, you know, like how the physics works and how they should be falling. And every time you see it, you think of 9/11.
Yeah. Especially for this. I mean, it's in New York and it's like you see the skyscrapers and it's going down through the, you know, through the alleys of New York. Too. Like,
absolutely, it's definitely. Yeah. But to say that it was cheap and tacky. And
no, I don't
buy that at all. It's not like they're out to just play on people's emotions because of 9/11.
I think they're just doing a realistic view of it.
Yeah, exactly. And when everyone's standing around and they're covered in dust. That's all you can think about.
Yeah.
But you're also thinking like, oh my God, how realistic is this? And that adds to the tension and the fear.
Yeah. And I think the sound design is something else that I think is really effective in terms of creating the atmosphere and building the tension. So moving to the bridge scene, when they're on the bridge and they're trying to cross and then his brother gets killed. But the sound of the cable snapping, like that's one thing that just... In watching it, it's very distinct. It makes you feel you're right in it. And so I think the sound design in terms of the sound of the impact, the sound of the crashing, and in this case, very specifically the cable snapping, I think it's all done really, really well. The sound is pretty great.
No, I totally agree. And I think there's surprisingly almost no score to the movie, and they use sound to give it the score. They use the effects of the monsters or the cables or the sirens or whatever the screams to add that score to it. Which is really interesting because Fangoria gave or nominated Cloverfield for a Chainsaw Award for best score. So,
Yeah. So it literally has no music at all because why would you have music in found footage, right?
Yeah,
right.
But it does have Cloverfield Overture done by Michael Giacchino that goes over the end credits, and that's it. That's it. That's the music. So Michael Giacchino. Well done. One stroke, done. Get nominated.
Congratulations. You're up for an award. They end up going into the subway. One of the questions I had here, so Rob has to tell his mom that his brother died.
And, oh, man.
And this is where Hud just zooms in on him on the camera. He's like, ooh, let's get this. This will be good for later.
Yeah.
Like, hey, Rob, remember when you told mom about... the death of your brother. Let's get that on videotape so we can rewatch it. That's an example of where I was like, okay. Even within this universe, I don't think you're necessarily filming that interaction.
Yeah, I think my only thought would be if it like somehow he wanted to hear how it went and it helped with the sound. But it doesn't work like that. So I agree. That one was like a little. I'm not sure.
By the way, did anyone really care when Jason died? I didn't.
No, I barely knew who he was when he died.
I wasn't even sure he died at the moment, too. Like I'm like, oh, okay, his brother's up ahead, and then the tentacle. Like, I wasn't, like, that aware. Like, obviously, he's going to die because the whole bridge got, like, taken out. But it wasn't, like, you saw him specifically. So it was kind of a weird, like, oh, yeah, I guess he was in there, and he did die, so.
He got hit by a giant tentacle or a tail? I don't know.
I thought.
I'm not sure what it was, yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, so before that that subway scene, you know, they're in like downtown, everyone's panicking, they're now turn around fleeing the Brooklyn Bridge going back into Manhattan. And there's looting going on, which is exactly what, you know, I would do when there was a giant monster attacking the city.
No kidding.
Well, who are these people? Like,
I know, I had that as a note. I'm like, why the emphasis on the looting? Like, come on. I didn't quite get that.
I get it. Like, you know, there's panic. What do you do when there's panic? Well, some people, they go off looting. Because why not? No one's going to stop you. Except for maybe a giant, like foot on your head. I mean, come on. Why would you be doing that? You'd be scared shitless. However, I will say, it lends to a really, I think, good scene where... Because Rob runs into the store that's being looted because he himself is looking for, not to loot, but he needs a battery, right, for his phone because his battery died. And, well, geez, why not? But as he's coming out, all the looters have, like, stopped what they're doing. And they're all just, like, focused on the TV report, on the news report on the TV. And they're just, like, mesmerized because you got these helicopter shots of the creature downtown in between these buildings, and you're just seeing, like, glimpses of it through the skyscrapers. And I think it's really effective because it's the same thing. It's like with Jaws, you're just getting those little tiny glimpses, and you just want to see more, but they're not giving it to you, which is great.
Yeah.
I also liked in one of those scenes when they come out and it's just like an instant war zone, like the army's moving up the street and just like gunfire. And like, I think it's right before they go into the subway to get out of there.
Yeah.
Just as a total like chaos and just like, holy shit. Like,
yeah. The rockets flying over their head as they're running.
Yeah.
That's actually like, done really well. Oh my God.
You couldn't even imagine what it'd be like.
Yeah.
Totally intense.
Well, when they get down in the subway too, so they're walking along and they hear some noises, and there is a pretty great moment where he uses the camera to turn on the night vision, and then you see those creatures that are crawling across the ceiling.
Run,
that's actually that's a pretty good reveal, pretty good moment. Reminds me a little bit actually of Wreck. So remember Wreck at the end where they had the night vision and the woman was moving through the kitchen.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
So it was very familiar there. But just one question, which is on the creature design. Don't you think those creatures look a little bit like the Starship Trooper creatures?
I was trying to figure out what the heads and the mouths
and the jaws, right?
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah, it does. They're like little tiny bugs.
So are those bugs from Klandethu? Is that what we're to take away here?
Yeah. Then again, that scene also reminded me of Aliens because they're crawling along the ceiling, and so that, I think that was a nice little homage.
Yeah.
Yeah, those things are definitely terrifying. I think it works well too. I'm glad they included them because you needed this like something up close and fast that can attack. It's kind of extra terrifying.
Yeah, but the only thing I didn't really get was it seemed like with those big jaws, they would do a lot more damage. And
Marlena really should have died a lot quicker.
Yeah. She's also like incredibly calm for having like such deep wounds in her shoulder.
I think she's in shock, actually. I think what they're showing you there.
All right.
I was gonna say, I did love their interaction. I think Colin, you mentioned it earlier, like, you know who Superman is? She's like, are you aware of Garfield? I mean,
for all we know, it's from another planet and it flew here.
Like Superman?
Yeah, exactly. Like, wait, you know who Superman is?
Oh my God. Whoa. You know who Superman is?
Okay, I'm
gonna... Whoa, I'm like feeling
something.
Are you aware of Garfield?
Yeah, exactly. I know, it's just like, he's such a doofus.
Yeah,
that's whoa. Funny. Like, everyone knows who Superman is, you doofus.
Yeah, Hud's a bit of a moron, but in a good way.
Yeah.
So what do you think about the mythology of, does the bite causes you to be infected? Is that really what happens? Is that
because you to explode? Idea? I don't know.
I don't,
like she exploded, like, right? Like, didn't she like...
Yeah.
I was trying to think, okay, well, what's the situation around this idea that if you think about, okay, going back to the opening credits and the fact that this is, you know, Department of Defense and recovered video and all that sort of stuff. This is, you know, one big creature that, yes, that's bad to have that running around and destroying things, but it's not as if that one creature could destroy the entire world, right? It would take a long time, right? But if it had those things that were jumping off of it and those things were biting people and all they had to do was be bitten once and then you blew up, I could see where that would be a little bit more of a problem, right? Where that could actually cause some sort of a global chain reaction.
Yeah,
sure.
Especially they can reproduce and yeah.
Yeah, but we don't really know because we only get a glimpse of it, which is, you know, in keeping with the movie, right? They're not going to sit there and like explain everything. But I like that scene because it was you know, suddenly, you know, Marlena is, you know, so she's in shock, right? They get found by the military. They're like going into triage and stuff. And then all of a sudden, Marlena's like, hey, I don't feel so well. And her eyes are bleeding out. And all of a sudden you hear, bye! We got a bye! Yeah. Oh, man. So good.
They just
well, and apparently, which I didn't realize this, and this is more of a trivia note because I didn't see it, but if you slow down the explosion, like when Marla's body explodes, apparently there's a scene where most of her upper torso is gone with the exception of her spinal column is still there. Like there's so, oh, so if you see the silhouette of the explosion, basically like the upper half of her body just vaporizes except for the spinal column.
I didn't see that. I did see it in slow-mo. And because I always thought like maybe her head exploded or something, but it was actually like her midsection just like swelled and just popped and exploded. But I did not. Ooh, that's disgusting. That's really bad. Poor Marlena. Yeah. You were the MVP.
I'll just say this in general. I really do think that the found footage and the, you know, the steady cam or the, what do you want to call it? The shaky cam, the general aesthetic in terms of the photography, the realism I think is done really well. Like you feel like these characters are there, they're in the city, the debris on the street, the look of the street. It's actually really, really well done. It doesn't feel like a fake movie set to me at all when you're watching this movie. So I just think that the photography is very impressive.
No, I totally agree. Yeah, the sets and all of that. And I think that's what I saw Matt Reeves talking about too. Like that's what separates this movie from like Blair Witch is this is like a full budget. They weren't just trying to do it wasn't a cheap student film, and that's why we're using shaky cam. This is intentional decisions on why we're doing this. And they had the full sets and they had the full like effects and everything with it too. So no, I totally agree. Like it definitely has that feel of like being there.
Yeah. And I think so the reason why I was saying that too is I think when they're on the street and they see the skyscraper that is collapsed. So Beth's building is collapsed and just the quick visual of that. And then when they go up to the roof and they have the sequence of the building that has, you know, crashed into the other building and they need to try to navigate their way across that. And then, you know, to Colin's earlier point, that's also the great scene where they have when they turn and they look to the left and you see the monster rampaging down. So all of those visuals, like the visuals of that building, that's one of the things that I remember even before we rewatched this. I'm like, oh, I'm anxious to see that again because I just think that it looked pretty cool and looked very realistic and interesting.
It's totally awesome. And when they come out of the subway and they're right there at Central Park and you look down the street and it's very dark, right, because there's no power. And you just see like one tower leaning against the other tower. Wow. That's just crazy. By the way, that the building there, Beth's apartment, that's actually at the Time Warner Center. So it was the Mandarin Oriental Hotel. It's leaning against the South Tower.
Columbus Circle, right?
Yeah, Columbus Circle. But that's not where her apartment was in the first scene of the movie, because that was more Parkside. So I think they actually filmed that in the Trump Hotel, which is it's just like right across the street from there, like on the north side. So, but they look very similar, but I thought it was interesting that.
My New York geography is a little fuzzy. I believe you.
The Columbus Circle at Central Park, that's where I proposed to my wife. So I know the spot.
Huh. What part of Columbus Circle?
It was just at the south left, south west of Central Park.
So the corner.
Yeah, that corner on the Central Park corner.
I know that corner well.
Yeah, I loved HUD's comment. He sees the buildings. I don't suppose she lives on the ground floor.
Well, I have to give HUD this. He did come up with a great idea, which is, you know, because they're not going to be able to go up in her building. So it's like, oh, let's go to the top of the other building and just like climb over.
Yeah.
Hey, HUD, you actually have a brain.
Yeah, then he regretted it.
But then he regrets his suggestion.
Exactly. Also, the elevators weren't working, so they took the stairs. They were on the 59th floor when they...
Yeah, that would just be brutal. Finished.
I mean, come on, really?
And Jessica's in heels.
Heels?
Lily's wearing heels still. Yeah. I don't think so.
59 floors, in heels, at this hour?
Well, and I do like it when they find Beth. She's laying there. She has a chunk of rebar just coming up through her shoulder. And when she sees Rob, I do like that her first, you know, it's like, oh, Rob, you came to see me versus like, oh, I got a fucking piece of rebar through my shoulder. Yeah. I just think, you know, her initial response is remarkably calm. But then I do love the sound design of them pulling her off of the rebar.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if you guys paid attention to that. Like a sucking noise or something.
Like, It's like a sucking, like
nasty.
I think I missed that. I just thought it was funny because she had left him a voicemail. And she's like, "Yeah, I think a wall fell on me." I was like, "Yeah, a wall fell. It was like a concrete wall, and you got rebar sticking out through your chest."
Yeah.
Jesus. But I like that how they put the camera. HUD put the camera down on the ground so that to help her, and it was conveniently not actually pointed at her. It was obscured, and so because I'm thinking like.
Yeah, they made
nobody
it easier.
Wants to see that.
Like, come on. Like, this is going to be so... They got her... They pulled her off that rebar so quickly.
Oh, yeah.
I guess that is the best way to do it. Just rather than, like, slowly.
But I still. Think you're supposed to actually cut the rebar and take it with you and well, keep it in look, the body.
That's when you go to the hospital.
Did not have, bleeding. They did not have an acetylene torch.
That's a good point. Good point. From here, they run to the helicopter. Oh, no, I'm sorry. They end up going to an evacuation area. And one of the things I do love here is one of the guys at the evacuation center gives them the code name for the protocol they're going to run. So this is where you mentioned it before, but they're going to run the hammer down protocol. I just thought that was pretty funny. Just a lot of information to be giving to a random civilian who's running around. It's like, pull him aside. He's like, let me also tell you what we got at Area 51. So,
yeah, it was good. I also like to see the B-2 bomber just laying down the law, dropping bombs on the monster. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Like a direct hit too. Really cool.
But when they do get in the chopper and they take off, my first thought was, why aren't you flying in the opposite direction?
Yeah, just get GTFO.
Right. Exactly. Yes.
But then it's also like sort of an homage because the chopper gets it, like the creature like lashes out right and hits the chopper and it starts going down. Which is like an homage to King Kong on the top of the Empire State Building, like swatting the biplanes.
You always get the last monster thrash. It's always a good.
Well, and so what do you guys think of the final reveal of the creature, at least from HUD's perspective? What do you think of that shot?
I thought it was pretty cool. I thought it was like overall really good. I enjoyed it. I like the end. I like how like the helicopter crashed. You have this like kind of. Like it's not going to be a rosy finish. It's not going to be like this. I did thought it was a great like kind of a final. Like, hey,
you guys didn't make it. That it's a bit of a downer ending, and I do like the fact that HUD himself basically is effectively bitten in half. I guess that's what I would say happened to HUD. Would you agree?
Yeah.
Yes. Now, is that a close encounter of the third kind or the fourth kind?
I don't know my kind.
I can't tell you the difference.
Second? It might be a second.
I did like the creature reveal, you know. I liked the membranes when it's breathing. I guess it was breathing and they're like
Look like stuff. It's brain or something.
Yeah, that was pretty interesting. So kind of cool.
But then I do like the fact that they stop to pick up the camera, right? So at this point, it's just Rob and Beth and they run and they're hiding under a bridge in Central Park. And then I just love the dramatic
decision.
By the way,
that bridge is very close to where Marcus proposed to his wife.
There you go.
Oh, there you go. But I just like the fact that, you know, whoever finds this, if you find this, we're dead. I'm just wondering, does anybody ever really do that? Or is this only happen in movies when you're down to your last few minutes and you're going, I'll spend some time dictating dramatically to the camera?
Well,
I don't know.
Or you think you dictate something else. It's just like, oh, tell my family I loved them or something. I don't know. You wouldn't be like, that means I died. Bummer.
Well, the only thing I was wondering is like, why does it take a giant monster destroying the city of New York and killing them both for them to admit their love for each other?
Yeah.
That makes no sense.
And what was Rob doing all this time before? Because, you know, Beth is pretty attractive, Rob. So, you know, what? Come on, dude. I mean, honestly, it's good Rob died.
Rob is a big, giant pee.
Let's just cleanse the gene pool from Rob. You're out of there, dude. Forget it. He's like, no contribution. Yeah.
It's like... I've loved her since college. She's been my best friend. We sleep together.
I'm out.
And I become like normal male dude. Like later, I'm never gonna call you again. Like
so dumb.
So lame.
Yeah, and then the last thing you see on the film is the footage of we mentioned it, but the satellite crashing into the sea. So you see that nice little splash. And again, at the time. A nice, fun, little, interesting hook in terms of, you know, what is this thing? What happened? Was that the creature? Or, you know, is it something else? I don't know. But it just left you wondering when you watched it. And so the fact that you don't have to have an explanation for everything, you know, where did the creature come from? it's not that type of movie, and I think it benefits from it. I think it's just fun because you're just sort of immersed in it and it's off to the races.
Yeah, because even after the movie, you're really still thinking like, well, like, was that it? Like, what happened?
Yeah.
Like, you have all these questions, and you know, that generates a lot of buzz and interest. And so, yeah, it's great for
and by the way, they just announced that they are making a direct sequel to this movie, and it will not be a found footage film.
Interesting. Okay. Because I saw that there was a plan to make like a Cloverfield, like a D-Day version of this, but I guess maybe that fell through. Interesting. So I don't know if I really want to see a direct sequel to this. Maybe I do.
I would. I'd be interested.
I'll watch it. So we'll see. We'll see who's doing it and who's production and stuff. But
yeah. Like if it's found footage, though, that wouldn't.
No, I don't think that's
it. No, it won't do it. They won't do it as found footage. I think found footage has kind of run its course a bit. Yeah. Right? We had a huge spike of it, and I'm thinking that it's.
It also only works for a certain, like when there's like a mystery to it, right? Like you're trying to, like Blair Witch, they're trying to, like, is it real? Is it not? And that kind of this kind of.
Yeah.
It kind of works for that.
And Blair Witch
era,
is great because of it. And it was also new at the time, right? So yeah, it was fresh and interesting.
Now it's like, yeah.
Well, let me ask this, Marcus. What did you learn from this film?
So Cloverfield reinforced a lesson I learned in Independence Day. When aliens attack, going to the roof to greet or get a better look is not a good idea.
Okay. Colin, what do you got?
When a giant monster attacks, just put the camera down and run.
Yeah, that was basically mine, which is I'm not going to spend a lot of time filming if a monster is rampaging towards me. I'm thinking that I'm just running the opposite direction. So run. That's the main thing I learned from this film. Now, the other thing I learned is that, again, just reinforced that found footage is not my particular favorite genre, but this is a good movie.
Did you get queasy, nauseous, or anything like that? Or is it just you just don't like it?
Not so much on the queasy, nauseousness part of it, like anything substantial, but it was enough to kind of like, getting tired of it. It fatigued me, I guess.
Yeah, I think they needed some breaks in it. Set the camera down a few more times and just let it settle.
Closing thoughts.
All right. Well, I think we can move on to closing thoughts. Marcus.
I really enjoyed the movie. I liked the rewatch. I thought it was a good setup, good characters. I liked the point of view. I think they could have eased up on the shaky cam a little bit and made it a little less realistic, but I think it really adds to the movie. So I enjoyed it. Great, great watch. Great monster horror movie. A modern update to that. So overall, really good. I also wonder, I never saw this on the big screen, so I don't know if that would be even worse for the shaky cam. I think it would be even harder to watch in like IMAX, Cloverfield in IMAX.
Oh, definitely.
Would be tough. So for letter grade, I'll give it a B for a horror movie. I thought pretty good, but it's not nothing amazing, but fun, enjoyable, good watch.
Colin.
I will echo what Marcus said, and I'll just say that I think, to me, it's probably the best monster movie that I've seen because it does use the great formula of Jaws to keep and build interest and tension. And I like the found footage format here because it does add so much realism and you know, in terms of the casting as well, because, you know, these are actors that you really didn't know at the time. And so, you know, it was very surprising when I saw it the first time and captivating as well for all of those reasons. And so glad I rewatched it again. I had seen it again before. So I think this is probably the third time I've seen it. And I'm glad I waited a long time to watch it again. And I'm going to give it a B+.
Yeah, I'll give it a B. You know, you guys have already really covered it. But I do think that, again, I just think that the overall atmosphere that's created in terms of the photography itself, you feel very immersed in it. The fact that you don't have big name actors is helpful. And again, just the creature scale, the movement, all of it just feels... It's done really in a way that it really does make you feel like you're there and experiencing it. So that's great. But the shaky cam for me is hard. So I'll go for a straight B in terms of my grade, just because. And so if there's a little bit less shaky cam, it's probably more in the B+ space. But I think a B is a solid grade and kind of represents, I think, because I do. I think it's a fun movie, but it's not like it doesn't blow me away, right? I don't walk away from the saying like, oh my God, I got to go see the next Cloverfield thing.
Yeah.
You know, it was fun. It's interesting. And again, I will give them points and credit for the head of the Statue of Liberty rolling down the street. That's just a great hook. So yeah. Well done there for sure.
Yeah, a lot of good scenes, but I wouldn't say like it's not. I'm not like fully bought in. This is one of my favorite movies, and that I think that's why.
No, yeah,
B too. Same thing.
It's good.
Really good movie, but
I might have to reduce my grade to a B just because Rob is such a big P. But no, I'll give it the B plus.
Okay. Well, speaking of movies or grades or whatever, Colin, it's your turn to make the pick.
Oh shit! Really?
Are you kidding?
What movie are we gonna watch?
All right. Been circling this for a little while. We're gonna stay in the same vein of science fiction, and we're gonna do the time traveling, twisty, weird, but very interesting Rian Johnson movie, Looper.
Oh, cool.
Oh, great. Okay.
That's a fun one. I was wondering if you're going to go Star Trek 4 or somewhere else, but
I thought you were going 12 Monkeys for a second.
Yeah.
Looper would be fun.
All right.
Good pick.
Yep. We will be back with Looper. I hope everybody enjoyed our mostly complimentary.
He's, you know, a caddy.
Pro jock.
Can I get down as a looper at a course over there in Himalayas?
A looper?
A looper. You know, a caddy, a looper. Jock.
Hope everybody enjoyed our conversation about the large monster rampaging through New York film, Cloverfield. We all pretty much liked it. Thought the shaky cam was a little tough in some places, at least for old people like me.
For some of you.
Yes, for some of us. Colin, can you jump on like one of those spinny rides at the fair if you wanted to right now?
Yeah, probably.
All right, well, let's give that a shot. Let's try it. We'll film it, yeah.
It's like a Mad Hatter's teacup.
All right, well, we'll be back with Looper, and we'll be back with some audio or video of Colin on a spinny ride at a carnival as soon as humanly possible. So, and with that, this is the Real DMC Podcast, signing off. Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
It's still alive.
It's a lion.
The very end garbled radio transmission sounds like help us, and if you play it backwards, it says it's still alive.
Which is so weird, but how is that possible?
Like, I don't know. Who can play things backwards anyways? Like, I've seen, like,
I know, right?
Yeah. But anyways, I got to run.
I thought I said Paul is dead. Bye, Marcus.
Dave, wait.
Okay,
count us down.
Wait, let's stop. Yeah. Okay. 3, 2, 1, stop.